Hey there. Welcome to one of our first stories of the podcast. I'm David All, and this is Belly of the Beast Life Stories and Beyond. In season three, we shouldered up with you and made it clear that this podcast is not for sale. No advertising or outside influence, a sacred and safe space. Starting with season three, we dedicate a poem to one of our listeners that is standing with us as an enabler of our mission. They're doing so by chipping in $5 at bellystory.com. To be true to our word, we're going back through some of our earlier content in seasons one and two and removing the segments that we feel may not be congruent with this idea. So enjoy. This story, like every other story on our podcast, is now 100% advertising free. A safe space where you can let your guard down, listen, and notice if something comes up in your soul. If you would like to be an enabler, and we certainly could use your help, visit bellystory.com and chip in $5 today. Now, here's that extraordinary life story.
It's a roller coaster. I mean, you're still trying to figure yourself out, and then you throw this in and it feels like your whole world stops. And for me, I think it took, 2 years of like really trying to figure out not only like who I was, what I wanted to do, but like what was my purpose of living? Like, why did I survive this?
This podcast is about the time we all get knocked down in life and climb up a new person. Listen for free wherever you get your podcasts. Let me introduce you to Ryan Chin. This year, Ryan was on stage at the prestigious Forbes 30 Under 30 entrepreneurship event for the company he co-founded, Neuro. But a decade ago, at the age of 19, Ryan was being rushed to the hospital from a snowboarding accident that would ultimately paralyze him from the waist down. Ryan was forced to open his eyes to this new reality, learn to not blame himself, and become comfortable with the uncomfortable. He learned to adapt, rekindle his love for athletics, and ultimately build a successful business. Ryan Chin, welcome to Belly of the Beast Life Stories.
Thank you for having me.
At the age of 19, if you can take us back to that day and that moment...
I was 19 years old. It was 2009. Me and a group of friends went up to Big Bear, and it was a friend of mine's birthday. And it was happened to be a crazy storm. Went snowboarding that day, and snowboarding was something I started. I think when I was like maybe 12 or 13, I started skiing at a really young age, and so I loved the sport. I went all the time, and Mammoth to Whistler in Japan, like. You name it. Like I was like such, it was like the one thing that I really looked forward to in winter was the winter sports. And, you know, I was going off a jump and I over-rotated and I landed on my back about 35 feet in like the super jump in the park at Big Bear. And I remember just landing. And the first thing I realized was like, I couldn't get up. Like I like woke up, I looked down, I couldn't feel my legs. I couldn't move. I couldn't get up. I could barely breathe. And it was like a whiteout storm. So there's nobody else on the park. And luckily, my girlfriend at the time from college was behind me. So she was able to see me. And I think she knew something was wrong because she didn't grab me or do anything. And she went straight down, got ski patrol. They came up, strapped me down, went down to the Lake Arrowhead Hospital, did a couple tests. They realized it was like spinal cord injury, which is like trauma one. They couldn't air freight me because usually with brain injury or spinal cord injury, they try to air freight you because time is so valuable. And they just couldn't. It was just too high risk for the pilots. And then I was in an ambulance from Arrowhead all the way to Loma Linda. And within 12 hours of the accident, I was in the operating room, and it was like probably like midnight, 1 a.m. I had three orthopedic surgeons, a team of nurses, anesthesiologists, everything. It was like crazy. It's like an 8-hour surgery. They basically reconstructed my spine. I was paralyzed from the waist down. It was T9. So it's like your neck is like from C1, C7, T1, T12 is your thoracic spine. So I was like paralyzed, like instantly. It was a burst fracture. I didn't quite understand the diagnosis at the time. I knew something was wrong, but I didn't think it would be serious. I thought, that I'm going to walk out of this, you know. And, you know, I woke up basically next 2 weeks. I was like ICU, crazy tests, and then I had a crazy infection in my back. I had to go back into surgery, flush out my spine. And then I lived in the hospital for the next 6 months of my life. So between living at Loma Linda, then getting transferred out to Casa Colina for more inpatient rehab, it was like, this is going to be your life. You're never going to walk again. These are the expectations. These are the people you should talk to. You should definitely talk to a psychiatrist because spinal cord injury is a very tough thing to go through, especially for someone my age, or for anybody for that matter. But when you're 19, it's a roller coaster. I mean, you're still trying to figure yourself out, and then you throw this in and it feels like your whole world stops. And for me, I think it took 2 years of like really trying to figure out not only like who I was, what I wanted to do, but like what was my purpose of living? Like, why did I survive this almost? Or why did it went from like, why did this happen to me? How did I survive this? And then how do I get through it? And then it's just like goal by goal. It was like day by day, trying not to think too much into the future because that became overwhelming, but trying to be like, okay, I'm going to try to, my goal is to try to get back to a more normal life, to try to graduate with my classmates and friends. And then after that, being unemployed and trying to figure out like, what kind of job can I get? Because while all my friends were getting awesome internships in the summers, I was taking summer school to catch up, you know, and somehow like it was like a miracle, but I got, you know, my first job out of college at a startup that was Hulu. And Hulu ended up being like one of the most successful tech entertainment stories in recent history. So I owe a lot of people and really kind people to give me that chance. And I think that's been a pretty, yeah, it was like a wild 20s to say the least. Not your conventional, typical like college story, but my story was about a lot. My college story, I think a lot of it had to do with sitting alone with my thoughts, but surrounded by incredible friends and family that supported me, but never pushed me until I think I was ready to make that decision myself that like, you know what, I got to turn my life around. And this is the card that I was dealt, and I'm going to try to make the most of it.
So take us back to, you know, you sort of got us through that pretty quickly.
Yeah. I
want to go back.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sort of, you know, you just had the surgery, mm-hmm. or you're in the ambulance. Let's go there.
Oh yeah, you just guide me.
What do you think? Yeah,
you.
About?
Why don't you can guide me on like what detail you want me to go to, or else my mind just wanders like too quickly. I think going through. If you want me to go back to the ambulance, let's say.
I mean, what are you thinking
about? I mean, the thing I'm thinking about in the ambulance is like, okay, like what happened? Total shock, obviously. But there's like in my mind, there's no doubt that I'm gonna get through this, and that it was just like some crazy shock that my body went through. I didn't think about how serious it was. But I mean, I think back on it, I can remember very vividly laying down, trying to stay calm. I had like a punctured lung, I had broken ribs, and like I was in a lot of pain, but at the same time, I had so much adrenaline that I think it just like was like, oh, don't fall asleep, because I didn't know if I hit my head or not. And if I had like a crazy concussion, I didn't want to sleep. So I like my mind, like I think my brain went to like hyperdrive. Like I was trying to remember every little detail. And then after that, it was like kind of all a blur, like waking up in the hospital, kind of going in and out of consciousness, and then realizing I had to go back into surgery 2 weeks later, and then back. And like, it was just, I had so many complications, and luckily I was in super good shape at the time. I was working out pretty rigorously at that time. So I think the doctors were thinking that I was pretty lucky to be alive.
So who was with you during all of this?
I mean, my mom was living in Japan at the time. She flew out right away as soon as she heard. My ex-girlfriend at the time in college was with me. Like, she's the one who saw me. As soon as, like, everybody heard, my roommates came. Kent, he's one of my best friends first and foremost before we even started our company together. But he was there. I mean, I had a lot of friends from high school, you know, come down and visit. But for the most part, I kept it on a down low. I never told anybody. I told friends not to tell anybody. But
why?
Because I didn't want to worry anybody, and I didn't think that it was. I think it was naive to think, but I thought that this was gonna be like all okay. And I think obviously, I mean, after a couple months, everybody started to know. You know, my high school found out. I got a lot of like well wishes from like my cross country team. I got, you know, Facebook, you know, that whole thing. And so
did that stuff make a difference?
I think it made it more real. I think getting these like get well soon or we're thinking about you, you're in our prayers, all that stuff. I was like, oh shit. Yeah, man, this is happening. You know, I was like, I think it was as much as a shock to me, it was a shock to other people around me too, especially like my close friends and family, because they were like, how did this happen? It was so traumatic because it just happened so quick. And I think it was just hard to imagine that it would, you know, I mean, it can happen to anybody, and it happened to me. And I think in a lot of ways, people didn't know how to react, but just say like, hey, we're thinking about you. Hope you get better soon. But for me, in my mind, it was like, get better soon is like, what does that even mean? Like, I was told I would never walk. There are these complications. I didn't really know how to make sense of it all. It was just really overwhelming.
So, I mean, I can't even imagine. I mean, tell me what that was like when sort of you're in the hospital and the doctor, I imagine, walks in and says,
yeah,
I've got something to tell you.
Yeah, I think it's denial in the beginning, like absolute denial. Because if you tell me now, if I think back on it, it's like the first 6 months was just like super optimistic. I'm like, okay, like this is just some kind of fluke. I'm going to walk out of this hospital in like 6 months. I'm going to be fine. And then reality starts to sink in, and then you start feeling a lot of pain physically, you know, like nerve pain, nerve damage, back pain. Like, obviously, the mental and emotional pain that comes along with it as well.
Did you see the pain as crazy. A good thing? Like, oh, wait.
Yeah, yeah. In the beginning, I was like, oh, the pain. I was like, oh, I'm feeling something. Or, yeah. Like, I'm getting this nerve pain and, like, it's coming back. I remember being hopelessly optimistic in the beginning. And I think the first 6 months, it was, like, just complete denial. And then all of a sudden, like, a very slippery slope into, like what do I do? Like how can I even live a life like this? And then going into like a deep type of depression of like, okay, like this is not the life I want. This is not what I signed up for. And yeah, you just go through every possible scenario in the head and every possible scenario of like, okay, this is not the way I plan things. And it's a long, drawn out battle. It felt like those, I don't know, year and a half, 2 years. Like it's hard for me to think like, oh, this is the start of it. This was the end of it. And it was just all uphill. It was just like a slow grind, like mentally, you know, and emotionally. And I think I just got broken down to so thin and so rock bottom that, you know, like I had to make a change. Like I was just like, this is just not a way to live or think. And this is just not healthy.
I'd love for you to answer the question for us, which you've posed a few times, which is, you know, you wondered like, why did you survive that accident?
Yeah, absolutely. I think those are some of the questions that start to arise as soon as things start to like, you know, settle, like everything, reality sets in and you realize like, oh, this is my new normal. And this is my life now. And I think after the craziness of the surgery, after the craziness of the surgeries, all the hospital visits, all the physical therapy, occupational therapy, like all of that, and like reality sets in, and you're back you're just trying to like go back to what was normal, and you realize that it's never going to be the same, and that's for everybody. I think that's just as I've gotten older, you know, now like I just turned 30, I think you realize that life is constantly adapting, and it's about, or life is constantly changing, and it's about adapting to that change. And so like as you get older, you have to figure out like, okay, now I'm going from college to work to this new grind and all that stuff. And I think for me, it was just a different circumstance where it's just like, okay, this is, you know, this is how I get to navigate the world now. I have to adjust to certain things. This is how I drive a car. This is how I go upstairs or downstairs. Like I got to get creative around these things and thinking about the world in terms of like what's accessible, what's not, but then not limiting yourself in your mind of thinking like what's possible and what's not possible. Because I think throughout the years, I realized that there's pretty much anything that I want to do, I've been able to do. And it's just been able, it's just about doing it in a different way. And I think that takes a lot of time and healing. And I think that there's no shortcut around it. So for me, I wish like, man, I wish I had, I'm in this mindset that I'm in now, like when I was 20. And that's just not possible. Like I had to go through that really, really dark period and had to go through that bout of like being super dependent on opiates and drugs and realizing that wasn't really solving my pain. It was just a band-aid on a bigger wound. And that bigger wound was like, you know, the mental and the emotional part of things. And I think that, you know, you find yourself being dependent on a substance or you're dependent on a feeling, and then you have to break out of that and realize that like, no, like I can hold my own ground, and this is not what defines me, or this is not what defines my life. And something that happens to you is not what defines you, but then how you react to it and how you perceive things as life is like, that's who you are. And whether other people see that or not, that's not your fault. It's really about how you feel about yourself inside. And for me, it took a long time to like forgive myself, like thinking that like, okay, this happened to me. It's not, I can't blame myself, and I have to let go of that. It's just something that had happened, and this is how I'm reacting to it, and this is how I'm living it. And yeah, it's just crazy. It was what felt like a free fall to rock bottom. It was like a slow, gradual ride back up. And then you realize how more appreciative you are about little things, you know, about life and how lucky you are. And I feel incredibly lucky to be alive, you know, and I feel incredibly lucky to have the experience that I have had to be able to have that perspective. So
I want to talk a little bit about coping skills that you've learned, and some that were bad and some that have been helpful. So I'd like you to talk a little bit about the opiates that you just mentioned.
Yeah, I think.
And then also sports and how you picked up athletics again.
Cool. Yeah, I think. Well, I had never taken an opiate in my life until like I got injured, and all of a sudden, like this is like the only thing that's supposed to treat your pain. And I realized that that's like one of the worst things to treat pain. And I didn't know it at the time. Like, yeah, you hear about these things being addicting. I think I don't have an addictive personality, but when you're given every single drug that you would ever care for and you have it prescribed to you on a monthly basis and you just take it, I think before you know it, you're dependent on it. And so I think I can empathize and relate to like what it's like to be addicted to something without the intention of being addicted. No one takes a drug in intention to be addicted to the drug. People take the drug and then get hooked on the feeling, and then people are chasing that high again. And for me, it was like that high was just like relieving the pain temporarily and then getting me back to normal. But the withdrawal pain was just like as great as the pain it was trying to solve. So, I mean, it took me some time to realize that, but I quit cold turkey and I've never taken an opiate since, like for, I mean, what, like seven, eight years now at this point. But I mean, for 2-3 years, I was like taking it every single day in high dosage. I mean, now if I took it, I mean, I don't want to sound dramatic, but it'd probably knock me out. Like there's no way my tolerance would be able to handle that. I grew such a high opiate tolerance. That was pretty scary to think about. Mm.
And then I understand that you've also picked back up the idea of being, you know, an athlete in a different way, yeah, as you were saying.
I've always been a pretty competitive person. Like, I loved competition. I loved competing. Training was a different story. Like, I mean, I would train because obviously you have to train to be able to be competitive. But I knew that I wanted to get back into racing or sports or something. And for me, I think of all the sports I was involved in, running was one of the things that I felt the most alive. Because when you're focused on like crossing that finish line, you feel so alive because you're so in the present, and you're like, that's, you know, all of your energy, all of your emotions, all that thoughts in that race. And so there's always something on my bucket list was to finish a marathon. And 2013, I signed up for the LA Marathon. And I was hooked. I was like, I can race, you know, and I could race really fast. Hand cycling, race chair. I did several marathons, like 7, got to, you know, fly out, meet the U.S. Paralympic team, try out, you know, hang out with them, get to see what their training life was like. But it was interesting. Like, I grew up from a young age being able to be, you know, competing in national or world championships for different sports. And then now for wheelchair racing, it was eye-opening. And I realized how crazy that training regimen was. It was like 3 workouts a day. And I realized, like, if you're gonna take it to this level, you gotta live here. You gotta eat, breathe, and live, and think, and dream racing. That was it. And it was a great experience. It was awesome, and it was one of those things where I realized, like, this is a great hobby, you know. And I checked this off my bucket list, and I feel good about it. And then now I can focus on, you know, another segment of my life. And that's when it was like, you know, one door closes, a bunch of other doors open, and then now you have all of a sudden like what felt like just one track path in life felt like there was a million doors open, and I could go this direction or this direction, or I can move to this city, or I can travel here. And, you know, I started traveling more after my injury than I ever had before. Like, I visited way more countries now in the last like 5-6 years than I have in my whole life combined, you know. And I lived in Japan, and I live in international cities, and I started to think about all the possibilities, and I was like, I don't want to waste another day of my life.
Is there any sort of support group for folks that have recently had an injury like this?
There were support groups in the hospital. Yeah, there were people who came in, talked about their experience, people who had been, you know, years, couple years to decades out of their injury, and they'd come into the hospital and talk to us.
Was that helpful?
It was. I think at the time I was like, oh no, like what? I mean, I was like, man, like what am I going to do with my life? Like, this, is this really it? But in hindsight, I think about it, it was super helpful. I think it's being able to, the idea of not being alone and not having to, you're already alone in your thoughts in a lot of ways, and you don't have a lot of people that you can talk to or turn to because it's like, it's a pretty gnarly, insane injury. That's super helpful for sure.
How important is like staying sort of in that mindset of perseverance and getting through it and staying fit? And
I think staying physically healthy is just so good for the mind and the soul. You know, I wish I was in the same shape I was like 4 or 5 years ago when I was like training, but I still get around. Whenever I travel to new cities, like, you know, I'll just roam around and just like not take a car. I'll just try to, if it's like 4 or 5 miles, I'll just go, you know, and just, that's the best way for me to explore a city is just to do it in person, you know. Not if I'm in a car, I'm afraid of missing out. You know, I want to see everything. And that's what makes time so precious. There's like a wake up call. And I think, yes, staying fit is really important to be able to enjoy all that experience.
So Ryan, you were just telling me a little bit about how crazy your life is now and how you're always on the go.
Yeah, things have changed a lot in the last, yeah, couple of years. I think, yeah, so after we had left Hulu, Kent and I, we started this company called Neuro, and it's all about, you know, functional gum and mints. And our first product was an energy gum for anybody who wanted to do more. And looking at our life now, it's like, you know, it's wild because I always looked up to all of my friends who were traveling a lot, you know, in their early 20s, and I felt like I was stuck and daydreaming about a different life when I was in the hospital and what my life would have been like or how it should have been like or all the millions of variations of my life that didn't involve being in the snowboarding accident and being paralyzed. I think now I look at my life now and other people are like, how do you travel so much? You know, I would say like a week out of the month, Kent and I are gone to a different city or a different place around the world and for work and a little play. I think we're just trying to experience as much as we can, you know, and it's crazy. I would have never thought I'd be here. I always felt like there was an entrepreneurial bone in my body, you know, because Kent's parents, my parents were both entrepreneurs and to be able to live that dream, to have that freedom, try to build a culture and a company around that, it's been really, really cool. I mean, I'm super lucky and I feel so fortunate and I feel like having gone through what we've gone through, it makes that experience that much better.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so amazing that we're sitting here in your office on, you know, one of the top floors and one of the coolest buildings in LA and sort of like looking out.
Thank you.
And we see very far and it's like because of you.
We should have switched spots.
No, this is the idea. But, you know, I really like relate to this story, man. Like I was telling you, like I'm a snowboarder and ran a marathon and like everything you're talking about just moves me. And as an entrepreneur as well, like your story of perseverance and sort of shifting and being adaptable to a changing world, I think is a very important one for anyone in any position at any time.
Right. I think it's about being comfortable with being uncomfortable is like kind of like something I always think about. There's always situations where you're like, you know, you're doing something for the first time, and it's uncomfortable. And then you do it again and it feels a little bit more familiar. And then by the third time, you're like, oh, I'm pretty comfortable with this. And what I'm feeling now is like this comfort, being able to talk to you, being able to tell this story. It comes from a place of comfort now, but before it came with a huge sense of hesitancy and doubt and unfamiliarity. I think, and if you asked me 5-6 years ago, I don't think I would have told the story because I didn't feel like I had a story to tell. You know, I didn't feel like I was like, you know, the name of your podcast, Belly of the Beast. I was like in the belly and I didn't know which way I was going to go. Like if I was starting to go up or if there's still way more room to go down and sink lower into that. But I felt like I was like pretty rock bottom and you get stuck with these thoughts and you get stuck with this idea of like, am I going to be able to get out of this? And somehow, you know, there's, you know, time heals those wounds and you get to the other side and you realize that there was light at the end of the tunnel when it looked like for a brief moment that there's just, you know, you're just stuck in a cave with no, just pure darkness, you know? And yeah, I think my only advice to anybody who might be going through something really difficult is that, you know, give it time, you know, and don't give up on yourself because you're your own worst critic most of the time. And you're always going to be thinking about, I could have done this better. I could have done this way. You're doing everything the way it should be. You're doing the best you can and be patient with yourself because then you're going to come out on the other side and realize that that's part of your story and that's going to shape who you are.
Thank you so much for the story, man.
Thanks for having me.
What an extraordinary life story. If this story moved you, help enable our mission and keep this advertising-free podcast going by chipping in $5 at bellystory.com. I'm responsible and accountable for this podcast, but I don't do it alone. Milos Brochetta is our sound engineer. Artie Wu is our advisor, and many others have helped along the way to bring the story to life. Thank you for listening. I'm David All, and this is Belly of the Beast Life Stories and Beyond. Thank you for rating and reviewing this podcast on Apple Podcasts and sharing it with a friend or two. Stay tuned I'm working on some stories that you need to hear.